Japan has a new prime minister today.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A look right now at the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. Just a day after the previous leader in Japan stepped down, the parliament there elected Finance Minister Naoto Kan. He inherits an economy that's been lost for the better part of two decades. Is he the man to turn things around? Marketplace Asia correspondent Scott Tong has more.
Financial markets cheered Naoto Kan's election. Japanese bonds rose, hoping Kan can do what his predecessor couldn't, pay down Japanese debt. By some measures, it's the largest in the world. Kan is known for a strong personality. He promotes fiscal discipline and currency policies to help companies like Sony and Toyota compete against the Americans. But not so fast, says Robert Dujarric at Temple University's Tokyo campus. He says the office of prime minister has limited power.
The prime minister of Japan is not the president of the United States. He's not even the prime minister of the United Kingdom. The personality of prime minister has less of an impact on policy.
He says the economic agenda is clear: Japan's debt and its aging society.
The number of Japanese of working age is going down very rapidly. The number of elderly is rising, and every year there are fewer and fewer births in the country.
How Japan fares is being watched closely. Most of the developed world is aging and peering over the same demographic cliff. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Stock markets around the world are mostly higher right now. European shares are up at the moment, under 1%. Asian markets closed mixed today. Wall Street yesterday, stocks mustered some gains. Tech stocks the winners of the day. The Nasdaq added nearly 1%. Dow is up 5 points to end the day at 10,255. Google has agreed to hand over some information that it intercepted from private Wi-Fi internet connections over in Europe. The company today admitted that it was wrong to collect that data. Several European countries said what the search engine company did was illegal. Germany may even launch a criminal investigation. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard is with us live from London. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Where did Google get all this personal information?
From its Street View service, which provides images of particular streets. You know, this service which began in the US has now been rolled out to many other parts of the world. These images, of course, are gathered by specially adapted cars. And it emerged that as some of these vehicles were driving around photographing homes and businesses, they were also eavesdropping on unsecured Wi-Fi networks and collecting bits of personal and commercial information. Google admits that this could include individual bank account details.
Bank accounts. So obviously that raises questions with government regulators.
Very much so. I mean, data protection authorities across Europe are now looking into this. The Germans, as you say, are talking about a possible prosecution. UK privacy campaigner Wendy Grossman says, OK, this data was on unsecured networks, but Google has gone too far.
Although the data is out there and it's being broadcast, there is, I think, an expectation that people have that somebody is not, you know, sort of driving past collecting data from their home.
Google says it will now start handing the data over to the authorities in Germany, Spain and France initially. We're talking about quite a lot of stuff, at least 600 gigabytes worth. The company says the data was collected as a result of an employee developing a so-called rogue code. The company says it's not sure whether he developed this during the time when Google employees are allowed to work on their own projects, but the company says it won't scrap that practice of letting workers freewheel because to do so would chill the company's creativity.
Mm. All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation Defender, monitoring, protecting, and helping improve your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. ReputationDefender.com/market. And by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com. American Public Media presents The Great Textbook War, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the Batten Institute at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
A new study into breast cancer finds a link between the way private oncologists get paid and how much chemotherapy they prescribe. Well, today the American Society of Clinical Oncology starts its annual conference, and the study is sure to be on the agenda. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
Oncologists in private practice rely on the reimbursements they get from insurance companies for administering chemotherapy. That money pays for things that aren't covered by insurance so well, things like counseling and nutrition advice and all the work that nurses do. A new study finds that that financial incentive to push patients to chemotherapy can make doctors reluctant to offer a test that may tell breast cancer patients they don't need chemo.
It's hard to do the test that says, gee, don't give the patient chemotherapy, and it's money out of his pocket.
Julian Schenck wrote the study. He's a gynecological oncologist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago. The test, called a gene expression test, can analyze the tumor tissue and predict the chance of that cancer recurring. If the risk is low, the woman may not need chemo. Christine Weldon directs the Center for Business Models in Healthcare. She co-authored the study. She says that insurance companies need to start paying doctors for all the work they do, not just chemotherapy.
Pay them for the time to have the discussion about the test, not have the drug reimbursement be driving the sustainability of their practice.
Some doctors she interviewed for the study said they don't tell their patients about the test, not unless the patient brings it up first. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And finally, we get the May employment report from the Labor Department in just a few hours. And a new study by the World Bank says if you're unemployed, you're less happy than those than if you had a job. That, is, of course, is a no-brainer. But the study also says if you're unemployed, the more friends you have who are also out of work, well, the happier you are. You then have less ambition to go find a job because, hey, everybody else is in the same boat. The study calls it the feeling of a social norm. There's another phrase for it, though. Misery loves company. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Catch us online at marketplace.org and follow me on Twitter, Chiatakis, MMR. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.